Before we start this episode of Krypton Report, I want to take a moment and just give a shout out here to our Patreon. I know what you're thinking. Gosh, everyone's asking for money, and I get it. But our Patreon is only $1. $1 a month, it helps us keep the podcast going. And what we do is we try to find interesting shows and topics and whatever we want to talk about. We've done, as of this little thing, our last recordings were on the Scream series. Brian and Tyler, that's me, do our own show where we record in the car, and it's kind of funny. And we talk about pop culture or whatever is going on. We also have the Supernatural podcast we've been reworking. It's taken some time just because of life. But we do movie commentaries as well. It's something that James and I have done, what we used to do on the main show that we've started doing here. So for $1 a month on our Patreon, you can get those shows. There's at least 4 a month. Also, there's my movie pitch show that I do. But also, what we want is if you're a Patreon, you can come on. You can come on the main show if you want. Or if there's something you want to come on and talk about, we can do it as a Patreon special. So all I want is for $1 a month, think about chipping in, joining our Patreon, and you have a voice to be a part of things. Follow the link in the link tree or in the show notes below, patreon.com/KryptonReport.
Part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's...
This is Jason J. Lewis, the voice of Superman on Justice League Action.
This is Mark Wade, writer of Superman Worldwide.
You're listening to The Krypton Report.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to the Krypton Report podcast. I'm your host, Tyler, the Superman of Blue, the man of tomorrow. And with me is I have new guests. And what's fun is I have new guests that I've never even talked to. So I can't even really introduce them that well because I don't even know them. And that's what makes this so exciting and fun. It's always fun when a friend of a friend type thing, you know, connects you to somebody else and says, hey, you guys should talk. And so that's what we're doing. I'm going to let them introduce themselves here. And then we're also going to be touching on the graphic novel Superman Secret Identity. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and let them introduce themselves. We're going to start with you, Pat. Go ahead, introduce yourself, sir.
Hello, my name is Pat Edwards. I'm so glad you had us on here. And I know we didn't get a chance to chat too much before going live here, but I'd like to start with this 400-page manifesto that I've prepared.
Awesome.
About everything that's wrong with the world. No, it got real offensive real fast.
We'll get back to that.
No. So happy to be here. Again, my name is Patrick Edwards. I am a professional writer. I am a novelist. I have a couple novels in the world, more in the works. I am more and more these days, because that seems to be where the work is, a professional TTRPG writer and designer. I co-founded a studio last year called Storytellers Forge. And we currently have our first big epic TTRPG book, The Black Ballad, currently funding on BackerKit and doing all right.
All right. That sounds exciting. We could definitely dive into that more. And then the other guest, I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself, sir.
Hey, everyone. I'm Case Aiken. I am a big Superman fan. I have my own Superman podcast called the Men of Steel podcast, which I co-host with J. Mike Folsom. And Pat has been a guest on our show plenty of times because Pat is a wonderful person and a great nerd.
Case and I are dear, dear friends and frequent collaborators on podcasts and other mediums and such.
And that is what led them to joining me here today. I have recently started checking out your Men of Steel podcast. I'm listening to, I believe, the most recent episode, The Return of Superman. You guys are talking about him coming back after the death of Superman.
Yeah. And considering that we're at the anniversary of it all, we wanted to do some coverage on that.
Of course. And you know what's ironic is, you know, we started, like, my son, he's 8 now. We've gotten into collecting with the McFarlane figures and everything. And we did a whole episode where we were just talking about McFarlane figures. And he goes, without missing a beat, he goes, why isn't there a Doomsday? And I paused and I was like, there's no reason why there's not a Doomsday, especially this year.
Ooh, McFarlane Doomsday?
Yeah. Like, my wife, for Christmas, the kids got her the Swamp Thing, the large Swamp Thing figure. And that's probably the biggest McFarlane figure that we have. And there's a couple that we bought that were bigger, but Swamp Thing's been the biggest. And I'm like, why is there not a Doomsday that's as tall as Swamp Thing and as wide as that Man-Bat figure they made?
Every time his name gets checked, though, I get hit, and I am falling off hard on McFarlane stuff, but that was one of my earliest, like, entrees into, like, grown-up nerd stuff as a kid. I'm saying as a kid hanging out at the comic book shop and Spawn was new. I think I started picked it up and I read the first like 20 some issues when it was new. Way too young. I'm in my late 30s, way too young for that. And being like, oh, this is salacious.
Spawn was that that like gritty comic book property that was like dangerous. Like you go to the toy store, you're like, oh, there's the X-Men, Batman animated series, and then there's the Spawn toy. And you're like, comes with the comic, and you're like, can I get this one? Your parents are like looking at you. Well, I remember when the movie came out, I was like, I got to see this.
But those toys, I remember those toys first, the advent of those toys and people. My dad would buy those as like collector's items or look for the Angela with the special ribbon on it or something like that, which is one of the first really rare ones. And so that whenever I think of McFarlane properties, because it was, again, one of the first comic books that I bought, I like collected a decent chunk of the original run, right? Like a couple dozen. Worth, and then just kind of fell off. But also I remember being like feeling naughty because this is way too grown up for for my 10-year-old
reading. And yet they had tons of toys at the store, and you could buy the Spawn Alley, Crime Alley, or whatever it was. And
yeah, it's a
all weird, the toys.
That's a weird property with that, where they're making the toys and they're in the toy stores, but also the comic book is incredibly mature. I don't know if either of you watched the HBO animated show.
Oh, yeah.
I did.
Very, very graphic and mature.
I did years ago when it was, I got it on VHS from the library, you know, when it was still like, can't watch that yet. But it's funny, like you go back and you think of the early 90s, like you said, you're in your late 30s. I'm in my late 30s. They didn't care what the property was. I remember getting Terminator 2 toys.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. Like that was just the 90s in general. Like there was the Alien toys, and then like even like the Batman toys, like with the Burton stuff. Like
it is amazing how many properties are like that, where they're like very, very mature adult source material, and then they made like children's toys or a children's
RoboCop
show.
Oh, Starship Troopers, another Paul Verhoeven property. Because that was right when I was starting to notice, like, I was like, wait a minute, this is I can't see this movie, but you have all these toys.
I mean, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original comics are pretty violent.
And then they're like, hey, let's make this a kid's cartoon.
And, and then it's like, let's make this the most successful kid's cartoon franchise property of all time.
And what's funny is on the flip side of that, so of course, you know, the Super Mario movie's coming out here in April. And my kids love Mario and everything. And I was like, okay, guys, I'm going to shatter your existence. I'm going to show you the Mario from the 90s. It was like complete reverse of like, hey, let's take this kiddie property and let's make this dark, gritty. And for
talk about the live action movie,
yes,
with John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo,
yes, and make it nothing like the games and cartoons people are watching. And you'll just you'll scratch your head and be like, huh?
What I think it's reference. There was a. I feel like did I dream this? Did it exist? There was some like Saturday morning animated. But it was like random. It wasn't fixed. It was you didn't know if you were going to get an animated Mario Brothers show or there was an animated Legend of Zelda.
It was the Super Mario Super Show, which had framing device of live actors playing Mario.
Yeah,
Luigi.
And
then they had animated features, and usually the primary episode was the cartoon of Super Mario Bros., which was based at the time more on Super Mario Bros. 2, the US version. And then they would also have shorts for Legend of Zelda. And then a couple of times they did full-length episodes that were all Zelda.
This is one of the many reasons I love you, Case.
Super Mario Bros. 3 and then Super Mario World. And those just became just the cartoon without the framing device of the live-action component.
See, I remember the live-action show very like minimal until I discovered it. I think it's on Paramount Plus. Like you can watch it on Paramount Plus. I was like, oh, this is weird. I remember this now. Just like the two Sonic the Hedgehog cartoons that existed
simultaneously, Sat AM and the syndicated.
Yep. The '90s, I have a theory that Cartoon Network destroyed both Saturday morning cartoons and Toys R Us.
I could see how it could destroy Saturday morning cartoons because all of a sudden you had infinite access to cartoons. I am curious if you want to share your theory on how it destroyed Toys R Us. Like that.
Because in the 90s, everyone was competing for cartoons and every cartoon had a toy line. But then all of a sudden, when you started, all your major networks started dropping having Saturday morning cartoons, you know, you started pulling back all these different toy lines and it just became
you know, just certain things that still exist now. Like, you go to Toy Story now, it's not too much different than when you went to like Walmart 10, 20 years ago. It'd be like wrestling, Turtles, Power Rangers, Star Wars, repeat, you know? And because it used to, you go to Toys R Us and they had all this variety. And then all that variety started shrinking, 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 shrinking to nothing. And then they all went out of business. That's why we just go to Target or online now. Because, I mean, I remember going to the store, you had Power Rangers, VR Troopers. You had, then you had like Transformers, Mummies Alive, and just all these other cartoons that now people have no idea even Mummies existed. Yeah. See? I knew you guys would get that. Cowboys and
he's alive.
The Cowboys Wild, and Lumesa.
Yeah.
Street, I mean, Shark. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I think you make a valid point there, because now there's just so much more noise. Like, there's so many cartoon properties that are out there, and a lot of reruns too, but like just so many ones. It's hard to have a concerted push of like, here's the merch that we want to sell. Like, here's the stuff that everyone should buy, versus, you know, early 90s, everyone wanted to get that secret sauce that was like Ninja Turtles and then Power Rangers. Like,
yep.
Like, think about all the clones. Let's that came
from Power Rangers. What animal hasn't been given muscles and attitudes yet?
Yeah. Yeah, first like animal human hybrids, and then like people in suits, like superhuman samurai cyber squad. Like, all right, here's all these action figures for that.
Let's kick some giggle butt. See, no one remembers superhuman samurai or the classic, you know, tattooed teenage alien fighters from Beverly Hills.
Yeah, that one I had totally missed, and then Dragon Ball Z Abridged made a reference to it when they like rattled off every Super Sentai based show, and I was like, wait, hold on, I gotta go back, check this one.
It's so creepily weird to just Google the image, and you're like, y'all gotta love the 90s cartoons.
Yeah, well, like kid properties in general, like the whole like Fox wave of like Los Luchadores and the what was it, the Champions of Tirnanog.
Yep.
Knights, was it Knights of Tirnanog, right?
Yes. Knights of Tirnanog, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and all then, that was Saban just kept ripping himself off.
What was the like, Pirates one?
Pirates of Blackwater or Dark Water?
Darkwater yeah, was the cartoon, but
yeah.
And then you had the Beetleborgs, the VR Troopers, right. The Masked Rider.
Speaking about properties that should not have had kids' properties, Conan the Adventurer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a...
Oh,
yeah.
Speaking of teenagers with superpowers, should we talk about Superman?
Yeah, yeah, and we pop culture like inclusions of these characters, like how
enjoying nerding out over cartoons that I remember. People look at me like, "Yeah, I have no clue what you're talking about."
We got you.
Yeah, oh, but man, I mean, like those are intrinsic to our growing up process, like because they are just a huge part of pop culture, and discussing like the world is impossible without conceiving of a world where like we were inundated with all of this media and whatnot, as is the case for Clark Kent in this book that we're talking about.
Yes, 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 it is. So the secret identity, I'm so glad you brought this one to the attention of that you wanted to talk about this one, because it was on my list of I'll get to it sometime. It's one I have not read until this time, probably about 13 years. It was right before my wife and I got married. So about 12, 13 years ago, I read this. So I was really excited to revisit this.
And it came out in 2004 originally, correct?
That sounds right.
So, about there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was really glad, because I looked at the list of episodes you had done, and I was like, oh, you haven't talked about this. And for me, it's like one of my favorite Superman books. And we talked about it very early on the Men of Steel podcast. So it's been a little while since I've had a chance to talk about it, since we already did it. And I was like, great. Let's do it again.
It's also nice to get a new perspective, like you said, because some books, you know, you read, you don't read them for 10 years or something, you come back to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring a different perspective with where you are in your life. You know, when I first time I read this, I didn't have kids. Now I'm reading this and I have kids, and that changes my perspective of how I interpret this story and how I feel about this story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to kind of come back around to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a really intricate work, and that's to be expected, considering that it's Kurt Busiek as the writer and it's Stuart Immonen as the artist, and they're both just like masters of their craft, and they like have layered it all with like all the subtext and all this like introspection, so that it's just a really, really refined piece of superhero fiction.
I'd say it's probably one of the most unique Superman stories ever done. Because I feel like it echoes other things, but at the same time, it feels completely fresh. And I think at times, even if he wasn't Superman, like in costume, you'd still enjoy the story for what it is.
Yeah. Like if, so the book opens with a guy named Clark Kent in Kansas who is teased because he is named Clark Kent living in Kansas.
Yeah, I want to back because for me, this was the first time I read it for this and I didn't know what to expect. And I found that I find just the premise so very interesting as far as what if this Superman exists in a world where Superman exists,
right?
What if the character Superman exists in a world and then actual Superman exists in that world? Because usually it's the medias that posit superheroes are real. If there is comics in that world, the comics followed the real superheroes, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, superhumans are real in our world, and now there's this media empire, like the Boys or whatever, you know,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And this is it just so happens. I found that very fascinating. And then I just don't know what I was expecting. I think I was expecting more of a superhero, quote unquote, you know, capital S, capital H story with big fights. But it's like, no, it's a very like human story. I don't know if I was emotionally ready for that. But it was just very like almost small scale, but big emotions. I don't know. Just like, especially also, you know, also as a father, small kids, and just, I don't know what I was expecting, but I was kind of like, oh wow. I kept like, as each new layer was kind of peeled back on what this was, I was like, okay. This is what they're doing. Interesting.
I think there's a lot of comparisons that you could make with Superman Earth One, which is the J. Michael Straczynski story that is very similar to this, like in that it is what if Superman was in the real world? Mm-hmm. But whereas that kind of goes for the route of being, we're going to do Superman in the real world, but it is a full Superman comic that's going to deal with supervillains, and it's going to deal with aliens, and it's going to deal with all the things, like he is from mm-hmm. Krypton. There's all these elements that we're going to bring into it, but we're going to explore it from a 21st century lens. This is one where it's going back. I mean, so the impetus that Kurt Busiek references for why he came up with this idea is the Superboy of Earth Prime, like Superman coming from the real world. And that is in itself like building off of the Silver Age Flash concept where, you know, Barry Allen is a fan of the Jay Garrick comics, and that it turns out that, oh, it was a different dimension. But like initially it was just, he was a nerd who liked this comic book, and then he got the same superpowers as the character he liked in a comic book and decided to be that in his world. Mm-hmm. But that was in the 60s, you know, or like, what was it, 59, I think, was when the first appearance of Flash, Bridge Flash. Like that world is very different than looking at 21st century America. That world is very different from looking at a character like Superman, who is, like we said, like ubiquitous in pop culture. Like, Superman is shorthand for superhero, and superhero as a concept is now a thing that we can't imagine being without. But in 1937, you may not have ever conceived of something like that.
You're actually correct, because I was going to bring up the thought when I first started reading about like Superboy Prime, the idea of, you know, in Superboy Prime's case, like, he's not named Clark at first, or is he? Yeah, he is.
Hold on. Clark, yeah.
Yeah, I had to think for a second. I've been reading. You ever read so much that after a minute, like, you have to stop and pause and be like, okay, wait.
Well, there are differences. He's from Maine or Massachusetts. He's from the East Coast instead of Kansas. Like, there are differences from normal Superman, but he is Clark Kent.
And then Superboy Prime, of course, we have the whole Infinite Crisis with him. But with this, I like, because part of me, well, okay, I know we're skipping around. When I read this, and he gets his powers, I was really hoping that wasn't going to be some sort of like wish fulfillment dream. Just because like he's out camping, you know, and he talks about laying there looking at the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm reading this, I'm like, I just really did not want this to be some sort of wish fulfillment dream story with Clark. But the fact is, we never really get that definitive answer of how he got his powers. They just appeared.
There's like a quick panel late, because I just finished literally this morning the chapter 4 I read. I think there was like a reference to like meteor showers and then some chemical getting in the groundwater in Kansas around the time of his birth or conception or something like that. It was because he's been studying for years for his books and things like that.
Yeah,
because we do get the line, you know, later about his book about the rise of the superpowered beings, yeah. And there's other ones that come up, you know, in the future we see, and I like how he is Superman, but at the same time, he's not exactly the same power set as the comic book Superman. There are some differences in like how powerful he is. Like later,
he's not quite as like just untouchably, like immortal, unbreakable. He's not quite as, because like,
yeah, I mean,
he can get his hair cut.
It is the restrictions of it being set in ostensibly the real world.
Yeah,
that they're dealing with, and particularly later when he actually starts to age. He's much more restricted in his power of action. But they do also kind of make note to that he has powers that don't make sense in the real world, but they do make sense in the comics, and somehow he has them. Like, he's able to hear around the world in a way that would have been impossible. He's able, you know, his senses don't work in a way that, like, makes any sort of scientific sense. They're all built off of this, like, comic premise, which I think speaks to his power specifically being... they are a wish fulfillment in the sense of like it has to be manifesting based on his own identity as Clark Kent and the amount of teasing he's experienced as being compared to Superman and sort of emulating that power set. Like they're very vague about like how it all works, like where it all comes from on purpose. Cause like, that's not the point, you know?
No, it's not. And that's what I like about the story is it's not about, you know, what I liked was there was no real, like, we're going to do this one-to-one kind of ratio where there was no rise of a Lex Luthor. There was, you know, he didn't go work at a newspaper. Mm-hmm. He became a writer, but as an author, you know, he wrote books. And, you know, I thought the way they did Lois was hilarious just because she jokes about being set up with people named Clark. And then, of course, he does find a Lois, and I thought that worked out really well, though, like just how they brought Lois into the whole mix of things. And she was nothing like a comic book Lois. I thought that was a great addition to just adding, you know, to this story about he's Clark Kent and everyone gives him Superman stuff every year for his birthday.
Can I just, in solidarity with the Clark of this series, I too would have just found those jokes. I mean, so fast. This is, I'm going to real quick step outside of this and let me give some real life advice to everyone listening. If you meet someone and they tell you their name and something that pops into your mind is a reference to something, their name, they have the same name as a famous person or a famous character or something like that, they've heard it. Whatever you're thinking of, whatever crack you're thinking of making, they've heard it many, many times. Don't do it. Just don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
I promise you. They'll like you better because they know, you know, right? Like if you meet someone, and I don't know why this is the first name, and their name is Steve Jobs, like they've heard it. Okay. Like they've heard if you meet it, cause that's a very common name that could be out there in the world. There's probably is another Steve Jobs in the world. And like they've heard it, and they'll probably again like you better. Cause you're going to meet them. You're going to hear their name. You're going to make that recognition in your brain. They're going to see it in your eyes that you made the recognition. And then if you choose not to acknowledge it, they'll probably like you a lot better. I'm just saying.
Just be like, cool, man.
Yeah.
Like if my name was Clark Kent like this, I would go by my middle name. Like I go by my middle name as it is right now, but I would, you know, people would be like, call me Ken.
Or like or C Kent. And then the initial of your middle name or something like CJ or something like that.
I would be like, whatever the middle name is like in here. I would find a way to not actually have to use Clark Kent as my name.
Yeah. But I too shared in his frustrations throughout the course of the book and found the jokes insufferable. And like the lowest thing, it's like, that's dumb. Not the writing of the book. I'm saying, and I 100% there are people that would do that or that probably do that. And think it's, I guarantee that situation's probably happened where people have set up a friend named Lois with someone named Clark and thought it was so. Are we allowed to do cusses on this?
Yes.
So fucking funny. But and it's just not. You're not funny.
Right.
You know, my thing would be like, it's kind of like, you know, if you met someone named Juliet, I'm like, oh, are you looking for Romeo? You know, they're
it's like, oh, God, smack that person in the face. You should be allowed to do a violence on someone. You should submit for a permit where if you have a very obvious name, like a name that lends itself to a very obvious like joke, that you should be able to submit for a permit. Like if anyone makes a show, I get one free slap in their face with no repercussions. I don't get charged for assault.
Well, like my last name is Aiken and so I actually also go by my middle name, but I do go by a name that begins with a C, and like my freshman year of college was the second season of American Idol, which is when like Clay Aiken had his like cultural ascendancy, and it's like you make that joke, it's fine.
Well, you know, like my name is Jonathan Tyler Patrick, okay, and when I was growing up, what was the biggest show? Home Improvement with Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Mm.
And like, I'm like, we have the same first name and a similar middle name, but boy, do people like to kind of point that out to me. Like, oh, it's like that guy from Home Improvement. I'm like, no, not really, but okay. Not even trying, people. That was... But Clark, I like this Clark because he is very... And I have it pulled up. I don't actually own the book. I got it pulled up on my tablet. Thanks, Ultra. You know, I think it's interesting, just he knows the comics, and then he's just so in his own world not too much like the Clark Kent of the comics, that because it felt like, you know, in this story he's reading more Silver Age books, you know, and he's existing kind of almost at the modern time. You know, kind of like how I took it. So he feels more like a burn error or like post burn era Clark compared to like the Silver Age Clark, which he's reading. That, if you're following my thought here.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like even reading is probably overstating it, because I feel like his an understanding of Clark Kent and of the concept of Superman is through osmosis. It's through people getting him gifts. It's through people giving him comics, giving him merch, giving him all this stuff. And so a lot of it is like Kurt Swan drawings or Kurt Swan style drawings, or like Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster era stuff that they're working with. It's the pop culture aspect of Superman that he is integrated with, and he is dealing with. Like at one point when the date with Lois happens, and it's like, oh, someone tried to set me up with a Cat Grant, and they're like, who is that? Like, I don't know, it's someone apparently from Superman, I guess. You know, it like he actively avoids it, but comes around at being a very true take on it still. Like while he is a writer that is not a reporter, because he doesn't want his byline to be Clark Kent from a newspaper in like the big metropolis that is New York City, like he's still very true to being Superman, and his first impulse is always to help people. And while he doesn't have a fortress per se, like he does like his solitude. There's all these elements of it where while it is intentionally trying to say like, well, this is not the Superman you're familiar with, he is at the most fundamental level the same type of character with the same type of goals. And that I think is the most refreshing part about it, because it would be very easy to say, no, while they've both got superpowers and they both have the same name, this is how they deviate in all the ways and like really kind of play it up. But they thread this needle of having both that contrast of the real world versus the fiction that he's experiencing and influenced by, because he wears a suit so that he can emulate the character from the comics, but he doesn't actually know that much about the comics in the first place. So it's like all those things, and you set that up for humor. But like I said, like, fundamentally, he doesn't want to hurt people. Fundamentally, he wants to help people in all the ways. Like when he gets captured, for example, and he is forced to reckon with, one, the limits of his abilities, but two, the terrible things that potentially might be happening to people like him. Like when he finds like the corpses and he finds the baby, and all that. Like he burns the facility down, but he saves the guards. Like he pulls them out of there, and like that was a moment where it's like, oh yeah, he is. Fundamentally what we are talking about when we talk about like why Superman is a cool concept beyond just like, oh, he gets into fights with supervillains, like why he's saving people, and like the goal is always to like protect and to do the right thing with that infinite power of action.
I mean, there's no better way of saying it. You know, it is, I look at when this book was published also, you know, is where Superman was in the comics and where he was just culturally, you know, it was a couple years into Smallville. which was a big resurgence of the character more mainstream. And I feel like this kind of take on the character fits right in with that kind of feeling of just the teen isolation that we kind of saw in Smallville, and the introspection fits the same way with him here of just being, you pointed out like the idea, he doesn't have a fortress, but kind of his, he has his solitude in his own mind, in his own self. And this, we didn't say it, but this was printed in four volume. Would you say volumes?
Issues. I mean, it's a four issue miniseries that was then collected. They're a little bit longer than your standard length comic, but it's, you know, pretty, like, it's a pretty short read overall.
Yeah, it's a short read. It's a good read. I highly recommend it to anybody. You know, one of the things early on in the first issue, I have it pulled up here, is when he's interviewing with the localish reporter, and he get, you know, he's like, no pictures, no video. He's trying to like talk to someone and help them discover who he is, and then he finds where they're actually recording him. It's a very good panel of just him losing trust in people.
Yeah, the first issue, it's easy to gloss over the first issue once you've read the full story, because the whole story ends up being very centered on his, like, his career as Superman, and a lot of the drama really kicks in issue two, like, particularly when he gets captured, because all of a sudden that shifts the concerns that he has about the world to being, like, actively being pursued, and, like, you know, it's not just for the sake of privacy, it's literally for his own self-preservation. But the first issue being about him first without powers and then with powers, and like, how does he want to introduce himself to the world if he's going to introduce himself to the world? You get a really compelling story just then. Like, that issue could have been a standalone story, and like, you could kind of roll with it, because you've got the opening drama of it all. You've got him first coming to terms with the powers, and then once he's identified in sort of passing and relates to this reporter who, you know, kind of goes full supervillain by the end of the issue. Like, she sets a bomb that to draw him out, which is, you know, kind of insane to do as a person. But you see him dealing with the concept of people invading his space, people trying to learn about who he is, and taking these drastic actions to invade what his life is, and to for him to have to like struggle with like where that balance is, like to make the decision that I'm going to remain anonymous and but still use my powers to do good, because I need that space. I need to have solitude. I need to be able to go and be who I am outside of what I can do. You know, I think there's a conversation to be had about like celebrity, for example, and how that sort of plays in. Like, think about child stars and influencers and all that, who like once you're in the public light, can you ever really retreat from it? And he makes the decision that he doesn't want to do that. Like that, and that I think is kind of a novel approach. Like, even though like the idea of a secret identity is like
a graphic novel approach.
Well, but even though like secret identities are like built into comics, like Superman has always had a secret identity. That's always like a thing that is like part of who he is, so he can be amongst the people and all that. Like, usually when people really are like investigating the concept of it and like really kind of exploring it, we particularly in the 90s, there was a big push to like equate superheroes with celebrities and look at them from that kind of vantage point. Like, you look, like we talked about like McFarlane stuff, but if you look at other Image stuff, like Youngblood, the explicit concept was, well, what if superheroes were also models and celebrities and like getting like photo shoots and all that element? Like, they are public figures like that. The Boys is doing the same thing in more modern work. Like, looking at it from a world where they are observed and they are captured in media, that they are quantities that the public wants to know about. And then this is a comic where it's like really rejecting that from the standpoint of mental health of the main character.
That was one thing that I loved about this book, was the fact that he never has a moment where he reveals himself. He's always in the shadows. He stays in the shadows. The government has an idea. And there's a couple of parts where there's people that see him like, I think I just saw, never mind, not even gonna tell you what I saw. Because they're like, no one's going to believe me. And the fact that he, like you said, he chose this. He chose, like, I want to help people, but I don't want anyone to know. He's not seeking fame or praise. And, you know, in the first book is, you know, that humor of, I'm Clark Kent. Now I have the powers of Superman, and the idea of hiding in plain sight. Like, you know, he walks around with his shirt on, his costume on, like, you know, at the festival. We have the scene here with the festival, and it's hard to see the reflection, but
yeah, but the Halloween festival, and like, there's lots of Superboys at this thing.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. it's just, it's fun. And then we get into, he meets Lois, that whole thing. And then the big part is when you find out they're having kids. And I feel like that's the biggest shift where he finally has fear put in him, where it's about, what's he going to do to protect his family? How can he make sure that no one's going to come after him? Will his kids have powers? Cause you know, at the same time, if you're talking about the drama and everything, the stakes are raised with him trying to go to the government and basically confront them and find a way that they can work together so that they won't come after him.
And they were shitty. Big surprise.
Yeah. Big. I was totally expecting them to be buddies hand in hand.
Just super chill and open and willing to collaborate, not try and dominate and assume total control. No. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, yeah, totally.
But you pointed out when you talked about backtracking just the festival and his choice. I remember reading it thinking, like, why then keep that mantle, right? It's so recognizable. But actually, that probably helps keep his secret. Is that because if develop like superpowers for certain inexplicably in this world where that doesn't exist, and you wanted to stay, you wanted to help. But you want a secret, probably putting on the costume of a fictional character would be one of the best ways to maintain your secret, because someone saying, I saw Batman someone dressed up as Batman, not a big deal, or whatever, is a much different. It's like, no, I saw someone do some crazy shit and they were dressed like da 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 da. And it's like new, and it's like, okay, well, you didn't just like make that up or something, right? Like, yeah. you're reciting something. But if you're just dressed like a very recognizable character, it makes stories of potential witnesses seeing you do your heroics more like less credible.
And small. And yeah, because it's like, I saw Superman. Well, I saw Superman over here. No, I saw a real Superman. I so did I. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially because it's Superman, like Superman specifically, like, mm-hmm. again, shorthand for superhero, like goes beyond just like, oh, it's this well-known figure from comics. Like mm-hmm. it's literally just like, a character who supersedes like the confines of the media that he was birthed from. He is a pop culture icon, mm-hmm. and they make the comparison with Elvis a lot, but I would say it's even beyond that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, yes. I would argue like if you showed, take their like official symbols or whatever, the amount of people that know probably what the Elvis TCB lightning bolt symbol and could recognize that is a fraction of, I bet there are just hundreds of thousands of people, if not more, that you could show the Superman S2. They might have never seen a single page of an actual Superman comic. They're like, oh, it's Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it like the Superman symbol and the Mickey Mouse like ear symbol, like the two most famous branding symbols there are?
I mean, they're certainly up there, and like maybe you could throw a crucifix in that mix.
Or the swoosh. What about the swoosh? I mean,
it really made me think of the Simpsons joke, actually, where it's just like Homer is careening down a hill and it's like, I know I'm not a praying man, but if you're out there, please save me, Superman. Like, you know, it's that level of it. And I think that that's part of why it works so well, because you can believe like, hey, if you're wearing this costume, people are going to dismiss you as a crazy person when you say that Superman saved you. And it's such a clever way mm-hmm. to hide in plain sight.
Absolutely.
And that, I mean, you could have almost named this book Hiding in Plain Sight.
Or Superman: In Plain Sight.
Yeah. It's definitely a property that I think hasn't been, like, you know, I thought about this. Like, what do you guys think? Like, if they did an animated adaptation of this story, a self-contained, you know,
I think it would be entertaining for people that were fans of the book. I don't know how, like, putting on my like business hat for like creative. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Tell me I'm an idiot, but I feel like you'd get a lot of people who are, because you're reaching maybe a wider audience when something's animated or, mm-hmm. and they're going to keep waiting for that villain reveal or something. It's like, okay, now the real story. And that's not what this is about. And it's actually it ended up being one of my favorite things was this isn't like a superhero story. This is a very human story that happens to star a superhero.
And this is
a very just human arc of life and making choices for building a life that you want for yourself and dealing with struggles. And there's no world ending, you know, larger than life climax finale moment, but it's like a series of choices you make, obstacles you overcome to try and build a life for yourself that you are could be happy with.
No light.
It just so happens you're contending with godlike powers.
Yeah. Yeah, no blue laser or anything like that.
Yes. Yes.
Because I just feel like it's a story that I like for everything you just said that is why I like this. You know, the older I get when I read comics, it's this type of story that I gravitate towards more than the punchy, you know, big battle, the idea of what these characters wrestle with. And especially, you know, when him with, you know, his wife, where he's trying to tell his children, hey, I have powers. He like leaves his, you know, journal out to see if they read it. And he thinks his daughters develop powers, but he doesn't want to kind of come out and ask them. He's waiting for them to tell him. Mm-hmm. And that whole like being the parent aspect, I enjoy this time around more of just like, you know, dealing with your kids, their lives, it's their lives. What do they want to do? You know, he doesn't want to force them into anything. And then to come around, you find out that they, you know, they have powers. And yeah. I like that he has the twins. That was.
Yeah. But on that, with the reveal, there was a line that summed it up. I thought really well written. It was a line, I think, that was in the context of the book, was in his journal he was writing to himself. And it kind of like talking about like why he didn't want to confront them or say, hey, I think you might have powers. Can we talk about it? Because I feel like that's a lot of parents. That would be one of our, if we think there's something right, we might want to go to them and be like, hey, in an attempt to be like, let me show you how open I am to listening to you and hearing you out. But how they could possibly hear it, and they spell it out so plainly in the book. And as one of the things that's going to stick with me, I think, forever as a parent of small kids as they grow, is the line, because he was saying something like, I'm trying to imagine how I would feel if somebody came to me and just basically said, I know your secret. Because that's essentially what you're doing. And you're saying to someone, if you try to force that conversation or you try to instigate that conversation with his kids, is basically in not so many words saying, I know your secret. And I feel like that's human instinct to immediately get cagey, mm-hmm. and defensive. Yeah. So that's something I'm going to internalize, just as far as I feel like in dealing with my relationships with people, or if there's something, you know, it's harder, right? Because there might be an issue or something you want to discuss with your kids or a loved one, and you really want to talk about it, and you really want them to know that you are here, at, you know, with empathy and openness, and you just want them to feel comfortable. But the fact is, you can't make them feel comfortable. They have to feel comfortable, and they have to instigate it.
Yeah. Yep. It's very mature. Like, I think that's the thing I keep coming back to with this work as a whole. Like, even the period where he is a boy, like, it's a very mature take on existence and existing in this world. And from the writing perspective as well, like, I think that there is a reason this resonates at the end, where you are seeing a full life. You are not dealing with a perpetual second act. You are dealing mm-hmm. with a beginning, middle, and end for Superman, for a hero who goes through all these phases and thinks very deeply about the choices he makes. You know, there's a lot of comics are built on either the spectacle, and that's sort of more of like a childish kind of approach to it all, or the conflicts and where like the deep emotions, like the adolescent power fantasy stuff. Like that's where you get into all the fighting and blah, 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 like kind of things. But fundamentally, the reason why we like superhero fiction is that it is offering us the chance to see circumstances that are impossible for a regular person and how they deal with it. And it is rewarding for us as readers to perceive material that is taking in and thinking very critically about what the implications of those are. You know, the reason why it's hard to stick with some of that material when they're not thinking about the consequences, they're not thinking about people might be dead. They might not think of like, or that they're just people on a page. And in this scenario, we're actually looking at a world where everyone's lives matter. Everyone is a thing that they care about and that they want to like really like explore and value, like, and that there are personal aspects of these characters that matter to them in ways that are difficult to articulate. Like, why is privacy so important? Because he, Clark Kent, fundamentally, that is a part of who he is, that he likes to be able to go off and think, and that that is something that's really important to him. And that as he brings people into his world and has kids and grows as a family and then gets to look back on his life and all the accomplishments that he's done, those are all really valuable things that us looking at the book in totality, we're looking at a person's like a very well realized experience, and like that just feels valuable. Like, you take away a lot from it because it feels very real, even though it's about a person who can lift up cars.
It goes back. This is one of the best like human stories I've read in a long time. Just about, you know, and going back to Tyler, you were talking about how this play is a movie. I think the way to do it too is like, you're not making a superhero movie. You're making a biopic that happens to star, the protagonist just happens to be a superhero. And that's the approach you have to take it.
Yes.
And that's the approach the audience would have to be aware of. And I was actually just, I was like, what would be an example? And I think a really good example of one where it's like, I find the movie very interesting, and it's not like, and it has a little mini like crescendos here and there, but it's not like a typical like action. It's not an action because it's not. Do either of you know American Splendor? Paul Giamatti,
yeah.
Harvey Pekar, I feel like that, like it's just kind of like through his life.
Yeah,
it's just a good picture of a human life, that happens to be very have all these interesting things about it because of superpowers. But again, not a cat. And I think that would be something that could be beautiful if done right. Again, from an audience standpoint, I think you'd have to do a really good job marketing as far as like letting people know what this is. Because even as late in the game as it was, I was still with the tornado thing where he suspects that his daughters might have the powers. I was still expecting that to be a reveal of some like very violent version of him that's an operative of like a shadow organization in the U.S. government that he's going to have to like take down or something and deal with. And I was still like waiting for that really like. That and this one thing where, and that's more of a me problem, but
no, it's because we're used to the pattern of comics.
Yeah, it's the expectations of the genre.
Yeah, exactly. So we are looking for those things, you know. Just like I was waiting for some sort of Lex Lutherian character to emerge, you know, the first time I read it, and then this time I was trying to remember, is there anything like that? And you know, as we get to the end of the book, how did you feel like all the perspectives that we built up about it when? You know, the government agent basically says Clark to him.
Yes.
And he's like, I know that you were very careful, because throughout the book, we have examples of him talking about, they did this and I stopped them here. They did this. I did, you know, where they're trying to draw him out. And, you know,
He burns his fingerprints off the glass he just touched. And like,
you know, where he goes down into the ocean, swims out, and then comes up just to make sure that when he appears, he's far enough from his home. That it doesn't look he's coming right from his home, but yet talks about how they put sensors in the ocean and all this stuff. Like, how did you feel about the idea that there was kind of this agent that was kind of on his side, that was trying to protect him from the inside? And that made me think of that could be an interesting story in itself, where you have this person who learns who he is and then respects him enough to maybe stop the government from internally ever discovering who it is.
But what I like about it too is he wasn't always going to be that person, right? Their first meeting is very violent, and even when is
their first several.
Yeah. And again, that's someone Malloy could have easily been the villain, right? Could have easily been made into the villain of the story. And then you have one meeting with him late in the guy's career when Clark is talking about, it's like, I still keep my distance because I still remember how he met. And then their last meeting, he reveals he has like grown as a person, and he came around because he'd known for some time now who Clark was, and he kept it to himself, and he didn't blow up his spot. Which I thought was really interesting. Again, like a human journey, right? Mm-hmm.
This little bit here, he says, hold on. So, I still had cotton in my cheeks, forms in my nose, tinted contacts. I had changed the shape and angle of my ears. Like just that little detail he went into so that if they did look at him, there was characteristics of his own personal face that were altered. So maybe they couldn't figure out it was him.
Yeah. And he does the same thing when he first puts on the glasses where it's like, it's not about someone knowing me, not recognizing me. It's about someone who's seen me at a distance, not immediately catching me from across the street. You know, like I think they do a lot of work to really kind of justify even just the tropes of the medium. It's really well done. And like, yeah. And then when he's dealing with people who he has to deal with on a more frequent basis, he has to get more elaborate with it. Like he can't just have it be, oh, well, they didn't see me very quickly or something like that. Like at the beginning, he's just relying on being fast. And then it's like, all right, well, a little bit more of a costume. And then, all right, yeah, exactly. Stuff in the cheek, stuff in the nose, you know, contacts, all the things to keep it further and further and further. And he's still doing all the tricks on top of it. So it's just a more layered and layered approach to a secret identity.
It's almost, you know, it's a secret identity, but at the same time, it's like a secret life, because we do see his entire kind of life develop through this story of, you know, boy, teen to adult, husband, father, you know, and then into grandfather. And we experience all this through him. And, you know, one thing I have tremendous respect about this story is they've never tried to, like, from anything I can think of, they've never tried to reference this in any other like crisis events or multiverse chaos or anything like that. There's never like, you know, this Earth has never been identified or under attack. It's always this nice little self-contained, introspective, like you said, Pat, human story. And it's like, it's almost like a comfort story of just really feeling the character more than the power. Because, you know, it's the comic book Clark, but it's not the comic book Clark, but it really is. Like you were saying earlier, Case, about the same kind of morals and moral compass and guidance and everything that he represents. It's the same thing baked into this character as well.
Yeah, it's like it's a scenario where it's not accurate, but it's true. Like
it's
very much doing that story, and it's very much getting all the beats right, and it's getting a version that is stripped of a lot of the context of it, but actually allowing for the meta commentary, like the meta context of the world. Like what is Superman in the world that knows about Superman is a really interesting question that this wrestles with.
It's a book that for anyone that I meet, it's a Superman fan who's never read it, I recommend. But if you weren't already a Superman fan, I don't know if I would recommend it right off the bat. What would you guys think?
Like this is one of my favorites. It's one of my go-tos for if a person wants to get into comics period, I'll say check this one out because people know the broad strokes of Superman stuff.
And yeah.
This comic doesn't rely on any of the intricacies. It doesn't require continuity knowledge. It doesn't require any of that. I think it's really easy to say like, hey, pick this up. And it's a really beautiful story that shows why Superman is important. Even without the confines of like, can someone beat him in a fight? Because that never matters in this. Like, here's why Superman is cool. Even though it's not the same Superman, it's again a very true Superman.
What about you, Pat?
Yeah, I think I concur with Case just in the sense of because if someone's not that into, as far as from like someone who's not a huge comic fan, maybe they'd like this because it is a different take on it. It is again. If you want more human story as opposed to a bombastic superhero, you know, punch people through skyscrapers type deal. And I like things like this. I like things that are some of my favorite sort of nerd mediums are movies that aren't capital S superhero movies or sci-fi world ending movies, but it's things that are, it's kind of another genre that just happens to take place in this medium, right? Captain America Winter Soldier is one of my personal favorite MCU movies, and a big part of it I say is because it's not a superhero movie. It's a spy thriller that takes place in a superhero world.
Yes.
So I like things like that a lot, and I want more of that in my genre. I want more. I want more like genre blending, where I want to take like sci-fi, take superhero, take fantasy settings, but then give me other kinds of stories in those that aren't save the world stories. Give me rom-coms in all of those.
Yeah.
There are some great comic rom-coms that have been out there, but yeah, I mean, like going back to the movie idea here, I think you'd have to either, the art style would be really something difficult to capture. Like it might be a live action movie instead of an animated thing with like animated segments. If you're referencing the comics or
I think
like
actually this would be better as a live action than animated. If you're going to make a movie, we might as well Blue Sky it. Right.
I mean, I would say I would probably work better for me as a mini series, like a 4-episode mini series or something. Yeah. Just break it. Cause it's only the 4 books, and with each book kind of having its own arc. And I think it would play out the best way so that we get a chance to dig into the character and the growth and the introspection and the human nature that we've all addressed, that we really find in the story, that why we like it, with the superhero wing kind of in the back. Like I'm okay with that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And can we just spend a minute gushing about the art in this book? I feel like we haven't really got, because the writing is great and Kurt Busiek is amazing. Like, if you haven't read Marvels, if you haven't read Astro City, if you haven't read like all these like fantastic works he's done, like you should check those out. But also, Stuart Immonen is an artist who can just do
again. It really fits the tone. The art fits the tone pitch perfectly because it's not hyper colorized or over-exaggerated, bombastic. And yes, he is a very, you know, Clark is a very physically fit athletic specimen, but it's not this like
ripped
Schwarzenegger Adonis. And like Schwarzenegger like physique that we see oftentimes, you know, just this impossible musculature. And it's much more grounded. And again, it fits the content of the story really, really well.
Yeah. Like Pat, I don't know how familiar you are with other works by Immonen. Did you ever read Next Wave, Agents of Hate?
Mm-mm.
I brought this up on the Men of Steel episode where we talked about this too. Like that art, it's the same artist, but it is this bright, colorful, very like Paul Dini style kind of like animated series, like esque kind of like very crisp lines kind of thing, versus this like gradient heavy watercolory kind of like ultra detailed artwork. And the fact that it's all the same artist and these were about at the same time is just fascinating to me. Like this is such a tour de force visually, like the shots of like Clark waking up in the sky on the camping trip and realizing that he can fly, the shots of the flood when he's seeing it from a bird's eye view, like the times where he's like flying through the sky, all the shots where he's over the earth. And obviously a lot of those are, you know, off of photo reference, but like, what a reference, like what an interpretation of all these things and making it all feel very tangible.
I thought of like when this book was coming out, like it was right after Hurricane Katrina, you know, it's like the flood episode made me think of that because in my consciousness, it's at that time period. But let's just kind of wrap up. Like I said, we're almost at the hour mark and we all have, you know, Pat and I got kid duties.
Well, I'm very, my wife is 10 months pregnant and is,
one too many months.
No. 10 months is the accurate.
No, I know. It's actually 40 weeks. Yeah. Well, I've done it 3 times. Okay. I've got 3 kids. Okay.
She's due this week. So I'm cramming all these in right before.
Which listener, that 10 minute, period earlier where I did not speak for like 10 minutes when I was changing a diaper. Hey,
that's the Man of Steel right there. That's what you got to do.
Like, yeah.
I've been there. I've done that. Like I know. So congratulations on you and your wife as you approach the time and everything. So just real quick, give the listeners where they can find you online. I'm going to put in the show notes, just any kind of way they can find you on Twitter or wherever you guys like to socialize with people.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons we wanted to come on is that Pat is currently promoting The Black Ballad. So, Pat, give your elevator pitch on that.
Sure. So, yeah, so The Black Ballad is an epic TTRPG campaign. It's massive tome. It is an adaptation, or it's tied to an album, like a studio metal gothic album called The Black Ballad by the band Dia Morte. And so this is a RPG campaign that comes with a soundtrack to play to in the background. A lot of you, this hard-hitting metal orchestral music. And this campaign answers the question, what happens when the heroes die? This is a campaign you play after a TPK. And of course, here comes my son right now as I'm talking and plugging.
That's awesome.
But so this is one, you know, GMs out there, get this, put it in your back pocket, because it takes place in this plane of existence between life and afterlife. And this is one you've got for when all the when the party TPKs, or if you got players that have characters they want to have another shot at that met their demise too early, check out the Black Ballad on Backer Kit. We are, as of this recording, we're at $112,000 collected. That's 6 out of 10 stretch goals. We'd love to get to the 10th, and the timing is amazing. Help me support my little goblin child who's interfering with the recording.
Yeah, Pat is a father of three, so we definitely want to support him. Yeah. He's like, I just to back up Pat and let him deal with his son. Pat's a great writer. This is not his first rodeo in terms of writing campaigns. He's done several successful campaigns before. All of them have been really cool. Some have done the same theme of integrating gothic music with everything. So it's all a lot of fun. People should check those out and check out other stuff he's written, because he's also a sci-fi author, having written Space Tripping, which is like a drunker version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So
yes, you know, thank you. Yeah.
So definitely check out all of those.
Appreciate that, buddy. I'm at The Pat Edwards everywhere, whatever media, whatever platform. If I have a presence, it's at The Pat Edwards, or that thepatedwards.com. I also do a podcast on the same network. Case and I have podcasts on the same network together, The Certain POV. I'm sure I'll talk about that a little more. My show that Case is a frequent guest on, that we need, I feel like we need our annual appearance from you sometime soon on Let's Rewatch. It's a movie podcast.
Yes.
Where we watch movies we loved in our youth and find out if they're still any good.
That sounds wonderful.
Fun.
Yeah. And it's so cool. That's a show where they go in cold, having not seen the movie in forever, pause to then go watch the movie in real time. Like, that, it's one of the craziest parts about recording the episodes with them, and then come back and it's like, is this like as fresh as possible, being like, how did this movie work for you? Did it work at all?
It's always interesting, the episodes where the energy changes drastically from the first half to the second half. Like, we were very high on the movie, having not seen it, like, oh, we think it's going to be great. Then we come back being like, oh my God, that was terrible, or vice versa.
Have you done Warriors of Virtue?
No.
Oh, God. I have not seen that movie. I don't even know what that long. Is. It's a
Kang-
talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles thing. It is a kangaroo martial arts fantasy movie.
Yep. It was one of those movies that my dad bought when he got back from deployment. He saw it at the Navy Exchange and just bought it for me and my brother. Like, hey, you guys might like this. Never seen it, but we had one of the toys because we found it at KB Toys. We had one of the Roos, and I have not seen it since like 95, but it's always back here in the consciousness, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Pat, please.
I'll send you a link. Or anyone, like, if you're interested, again, there's so much cool stuff going on with this. There's not only the orchestral backing track, the art is utterly gorgeous. We're going to have maps for your VTTs. We're going to have, we have downloadable like NPC audio by professional voice actors. One of our voice actors who's recording lines for us, so you can like download and you can play it, like really set the tone, is Carlos Ferro, who was the voice of Dom in the Gears of War series, who was Leonardo da Vinci in the Assassin's Creed game series.
Nice.
Our art director, James Masingo. So the art is just, he's worked for Borderlands 2. He worked on that. He worked on Shadowrun. So check out just The Black Ballad, or it's on Backer Kit, not Kickstarter, Backer Kit. Backer Kit, awesome organization. We've partnered with them for a long-term partnership. We got a bunch of books coming on their platform. I'll send you a link. You can check out my website. There's a link right on the landing page. We'd love your support. And also, you're supporting lots of really, really awesome people, really good. So we take it really seriously as far as like paying our freelancers and our collaborators. And we have multiple stretch goals built in. That we're already at a point where everyone's getting paid their full quote for all the work, all of our collaborators and freelancers. But we have raises built in for stretch goals. We have stretch goals that are purely, we want to pay these people more. We want to pay our freelancers more. And especially in an industry where oftentimes organizations are finding reasons to pay freelancers less, or you know, hold back money that they're owed. And myself and my partner Rick Hines and I are both victims of that in the past, where we've been taken advantage of by studios and not paid what we were owed, and or people taking credit for work. So we are support Storytellers Forge. We are this new studio that is trying to be this sort of haven for independent creators that want to get their things out in the world, get paid fairly for it, and also retain full ownership of their own IP. That's a big thing too. So check us out. Case, do your stuff.
Yeah, well,
and you're a delightful human being, and I love you.
As for me, as Pat mentioned, we are part of the same podcast network, which is the Certain POV Podcast Network. I've got a couple of shows on there, as well as we have a YouTube channel that I put a lot of stuff out there. So if you are a Superman fan, which I am assuming most of the people here are, so we mentioned the show, Men of Steel. It is a podcast that you can find on all of your players, but again, links at certainpov.com. We also put up clips on our YouTube channel called Minutes of Steel. And on the YouTube channel, we also put up a series called Superman Analogs, where I talk about characters who are often based on Superman or have some sort of thematic similarity to Superman. So, you know, first episode was Captain Marvel / Shazam, as an example, where we'll talk about Hyperion, or sometimes it'll be a bigger stretch, like characters who are dealing with the archetypes of Superman, but are, you know, second or third generation removed from that all. But usually those are run about 3 to 5 minutes, and it's just like, here's a quick, like, nutshell explanation of who this character is, kind of thing. So check those out at the Certain POV Media YouTube channel. For other stuff, if you like movies, I am the host of Another Pass, where we look at movies and discuss how at the time of production they could have been refined, or every 5 episodes we'll look at a movie that was almost a giant, you know, train wreck of a production, and how, like, through creativity or gumption, they were able to figure out making a pretty good movie out of it. Also, check that out. We just did a run of the original 5 Planet of the Apes movies, going in reverse order. Mm-hmm. So, like, with Battle, it's like, all right, so Conquest came out, how do you make the sequel? Like, and going in reverse order up until our 150th episode, which was looking at the giant behind the scenes nightmare that was the production of the original Planet of the Apes and how successful of a movie it ultimately was. So that, like, check all those out. They're great. And yeah, like, those are the main active stuff that I'm working on, aside from, spawning. those are the main things I want to direct people towards. But you can find links all over at certainpov.com for all the stuff both Pat and I are working on.
All right. Well, thank you guys for being here. I appreciate your time and the conversation, the insights, and keep us updated with, you know, the Black Ballot. That would be awesome.
Will do. Thank you so much. Oh, you want to say bye? You say bye bye. Say bye bye. No, he's not gonna. He's gonna smack the mic. He's gonna smack the microphone.
He booped the mic. That's his bye bye.
Yeah.
Look up in the sky.
We just want to say, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please check out other podcasts on the Press Play Podcast Network. We're going to press pause and hear a few words from our other podcasts on Press Play Podcast Network.
Hello, Brooks here with the Books with Brooks monthly book club podcast. Here's how Books with Brooks works. We read one book a month, and then we talk about it. Classics like Stephen King's The Shining, debut novels like We Are the Brennans by Tracy Lang, and tons of other compelling, life-changing stories, one book and 1 month at a time. So come read along with us, and then listen in.
If you are like Tyler and James and can't get enough Super Talk, check out these other podcasts. Digging for Kryptonite, Supergirl Radio, The Last Sons of Krypton, The Superboy Legacy Podcast, All-Star Superfans, Superman the Animated Podcast, The Aspiring Kryptonians, Always Hold On to Smallville, The Geek of Steel, and Truth, Justice, and Hope.
Remember to check out Krypton Report on all social media platforms. Go to linktree.com/KryptonReport. You find all of our report.
This is Dan Jurgens, and if you want to have a good time, keep listening to the Krypton Report.
Look up in the sky.
We just want to say, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please check out other podcasts on the Press Play Podcast Network. $1 a month, you'll get extra special content that you don't get on the main show, like movie commentaries and whatever else comes out of our mouths. So check it out, patreon.com/KryptonReport.